Good morning, everyone. I'd like to get started. It's 9:30. May I ask first for an approval of the agenda? Second? Without objection. And approval of the minutes of March the 13th, 2016. And second?
Second.
Agreed, without objection. We have three things this morning on our agenda. The first is an update of Metro's progress in addressing the 16 open recommendations from the NTSB that are ranked hazard 1 and 2. That indicates undesirable or unacceptable status, and this was requested by Board Member Goldman a month or so ago. Next, Mr. Lavin will brief the committee on the Metro's safety performance for the first quarter of 2017. In response to our committee's most recent discussion about metrics, today's report not only includes the customary customer and employee injury rates, but Mr. Lavin has also included information about other incidents such as rail fires, derailments, red signal overruns, pedestrian strikes, and bus collisions. Today's presentation also includes year-over-year comparisons with WMATA incidents, as well as comparable rates at other peer agencies. And third, I've asked Mr. Lavin to summarize the letter we got this week from the FTA relating to roadway worker safety and the actions we are taking and have taken in response. I'd like to start with the last first, so we'll start, if you will, Mr. Lavin, with discussion of the FTA letter and your reaction to it. Thank you.
Okay, good morning. I'm not going to do a complete safety brief, but for those who are new to this session, in the event of an emergency, you can egress through the main doors or you can egress through the emergency exits behind me. We're going to assemble at the lawn of the National Building Museum. There is an AED located behind the guard station. Fire extinguishers are strategically placed throughout the building, and restrooms are past the guard desk on the left. With that, I'll address the FTA letter. On April 24, 2017, Metro received the FTA's letter regarding immediate actions Metro must perform to provide additional protection to roadway workers. The letter requested within 5 business days, or May 1, 2017, that the authorities submit work plans to address the 6 specific items related to enhancing roadway worker protection. We are currently finalizing the requested work plans and will be transmitting the necessary document to the FTA for their review and approval within the allotted time frame. The work plan WMATA will be submitting to the FTA will address all of the requests. WMATA will commence a safety stand down beginning May 8, 2017 that will require over 5,500 employees to attend and ensure an understanding of the material presented, which includes reissuing previous bulletins on proper and required radio communication, a newly developed and approved permanent order on file time usage, as well as a newly developed advanced mobile flagger procedure as a means of redundant protection. These actions will specifically focus on roadway worker protection. Additionally, WMATA continues to work on previously identified issues such as staffing and responsibilities of our rock controllers. Since establishment of the FTA WMATA State Oversight Office, WMATA has worked closely with the FTA staff to address safety concerns and ensure clear and open lines of communication exist. In addition of regular working staff meetings between FTA oversight staff and WMATA employees, the director of WMATA State Oversight and I meet regularly to discuss issues and concerns. I believe this relationship is invaluable as WMATA moves towards a positive and lasting safety culture. In regards to the cited 19 actions that are passed through, WMATA is working to develop and implement and close all of the safety actions.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. I wanted to share something that I had a conversation yesterday with the FTA. It was a routine conversation we always have before board meetings, and I had said that I was surprised by the letter because I had thought relationships and work relationships were proceeding well. FTA said they are. They were satisfied with the relationship here. They thought WMATA was working very hard. Their concern was there had been some incidents of roadway safety crises, and they felt as a regulator they needed to get out there with the letter with some recommendations and some actions required. They made the point that they had not gone the safety directive route, but they went with a letter. I think both are enforceable, so I'm not sure there's a huge distinction, but this is considered a less formal action. I was very interested in talking to you at some length, as I did, in terms of what you're doing specifically to address these. And I think of the 19, you're fairly well along on most all of them. Is there anything else you'd like to elaborate on with respect to your actions?
I mean, unless the board has specific questions.
All right. Well, let me say then, perhaps there are other board members with questions. I may come back later, but anyone?
Just a couple of questions about the letter. The emphasis seems to be focused on the rock operators and also on the roadway workers themselves. Is there any actions associated with the operators themselves, the train operators, or is this issue really belong to the control center and to the roadway workers?
So what we're doing is we're trying to treat this as almost a triangular relationship. So with the new file time procedure, you're not only the RIC is going to have to get confirmation that the safeguards are put in place, but they also have to identify the train ID number that was contacted and told to hold at a specific location. So you should have that communication between all three parties, which is what you need for file time.
So are you looking at putting in redundancies in the operations center, or are the redundancies going to be out with the roadway workers?
The redundancy is what I mentioned briefly with the advanced mobile flagger. So the way that would work is we would put an individual at the platform in advance of where the employees are walking. That person would be positioned at an 8-call marker, and I actually have, if you'd like to see it, the devices they will use to use. I could pull them out.
Yeah, show it.
Each of the flaggers would have positioned at the 8-call marker a flashing yellow light. If they stand on a platform, they'd also be holding an orange flag. And the reason they hold the orange flag is in the event you have a train that is not intended to stop at a station, like a transfer train, they would be able to wave the orange flag, have high visibility to stop that train. And essentially, when the train made a stop, there would be a script that the employee who's acting as the flagger would read to the train operator, similar to a Miranda card that you'd see that the police department uses. So each department will be issued this card. And this is not the final version. And essentially, it requires the advanced flagger to tell the train operator when they leave the station. They're to blow their horn continuously. They're to operate at half their regulated speed. They're expected to encounter employees on the tracks. If they observe an employee on the tracks, they're to further reduce their speed to 10 miles an hour and be prepared to stop. If they do not receive a proceed signal, they must stop. Once given a proceed signal, they can proceed at 10 miles an hour until the entire train has passed the employee. I think this is one of the real means of ensuring positive communication between a roadway worker and the train. Until we, you know, further expand the solutions we're already implementing, such as ProTran.
Are there other questions? Mr. Goldman.
Safety directives go back, at least as I read the letter, to December 2015. And there's a total of, I guess, 32 and 19 are still open. I'm really trying to understand why after a year and a half, 18 months, on something that we're, you know, lives are at stake, roadway workers, why it is taking that long to develop corrective action plans responsive to the FDA directives. Is it a lack of personnel in your office? Is it a lack of support and cooperation you're getting from other organizations within the authority? Why does it take so long to do something that at least sitting here would seem to be something that one should be able to do in 6 months, if, you know, certainly within 18 months?
Sure. I'll just make a few comments on impact and can comment further. So, one of the big ones, obviously, is getting more rock controllers. And you have to hire them, you have to train them, and that takes time, literally, to get the people that are even qualified. That has taken time. And FDA is aware of that. You know, it's not like we weren't doing stuff. They knew we were doing it. They want us to do it quicker, and so do we. But there are certain things that just take lead time to get the pilot program going. Literally, we had to find a contractor that had something that we could put out there, and that's what we did. You want to comment on the other ones that come to your mind?
Yeah, and I just want to point out, there could be a perception that it's open and nothing was done. Every single plan had submitted work plans, but we gave them updates, and they might not have accepted them. So we're going back and forth. So it's not at zero. It's somewhere along the spectrum of getting completed. And to Paul's point, you know, you're not only dealing with trying to onboard people. It's an 8-month process to grow a rail controller. And there's a failure rate because you don't want people who are not qualified in that seat. And there's also an attrition rate. So it's a very, you know, it's a challenge we recognize. It's a challenge we're giving a lot of focus to address.
I just got to tell you, on the hiring of controllers, for 3 years I've heard about the problem of the controllers. And every CEO and every chief safety officer has told this committee and told this board that they had a plan underway and that new controllers were being hired and the problem would get resolved soon. There seems to be something much more going on if we really can't staff up the number of rail operating control center controllers after 2.5-3 years, at least this board member's been hearing about this as a deficiency cited by federal inspectors with the WMATA operation, and it doesn't get done.
Again, we are looking at other things we can do there, everything from salary to different types of training to adding more superintendents, all those types of things that we are doing differently than maybe was done in the past. Because, yeah, there's other root causes there. But as Pat said, it's a long process, and a lot of people don't get all the way through it. And we have to start over. So that, you know, you can add another 8 months on that previous 8 months.
On that note, I'd like to ask if other similar organizations have this trouble with their operating system, other ROCCs. I'm just curious if your experience with New York, Pat.
I could speak of my experience in New York. We had the same issues. This is not uncommon for the industry. We had to develop master staffing plans. We had to offer financial incentives, and those incentives were if you came into that position, you received some type of monetary stipend. If you left the position, the money stayed behind. We had found that one of the problems we were doing, we were offering the greatest incentives to those employees with the least experience. When you wanted to attract employees of greater experience, for example, we would give, say, a $16,000 raise to an assistant trained dispatcher, whereas a dispatcher might only get 7 or 8 because of the salary structure. So we started limiting the titles that could receive those incentives and increase them. So there are strategies that we can adopt here, and we are focusing on those strategies.
And with respect to your date for the stand down, that's May the 8th. Has that been agreed to by FTA? Are they comfortable with that?
Well, we're not responding until May 1st, but okay. I don't anticipate them having an objection to it, and I'm sure they'll attend.
But have you had conversations with them about it, or I'm just curious?
No. Minor conversations, okay. Back and forth, just to make sure that I don't go too far downstream and then we have to pull something back. Mm-hmm. So I've had limited conversations with them.
But you are on track to respond in the time frame required, the 5 days?
Correct.
Okay. Yes, Leif.
I just wanted to follow up on some of the comments made by Mr. Goldman. You know, it seems like there's something more going on in the ROC than simply hiring the right people. You know, the footnotes in the letter certainly hint that we've got situations where, you know, rail controllers are performing non-essential tasks, you know, during their tour of duty, or that controllers are transitioning, you know, from one shift to another while managing foul time, and that continuity of oversight is lost. So, I think we deserve a lot more evidence that there's a systematic and comprehensive reform going on with the ROC. And I think as a board, I'm going to recommend that we impose some clear definition around what we expect. And there should be consequences if management is unable to effectuate these reforms, because I think we're beyond the point of giving you guys additional room. And I think there seems to be something, what I'm reading between the lines is we're not getting an accurate portrayal of what's going on. We're kind of slipping back into old WMATA, where management kind of glosses over problems and doesn't provide us a clear understanding of what's going on. We've been through other safety directors, and we may have to go through more.
I would disagree that we are not glossing over anything. If we find anything, we'll bring it to the board. We will work through this. We are working through this, and we'll continue to do it. If there's other issues we need in terms of resources, we'll bring them to you. But we will continue to work on it very hard, and I know that there's been a tremendous change in the approach that we've been taking over what I've seen in the past.
Are there other comments or questions from the committee? All right, seeing none, let's move to the next item, which is the review of the status of the NTSB recommendations. Mr. Lavin.
Okay, so this update was requested by Mr. Goldman. So it's on the, this update will be on the open NTSB recommendations request by Mr. Goldman and the current status of the 16 open category 1 and 2 as rated by, 1 and 2 hazards as rated by WMATA. Before providing the update, let me put in context that over the years, Metros has been operating. The NTSB has issued 101 recommendations, of which all but 30 have been approved and determined closed by the NTSB. The 16 addressed today will be part of the 30 remaining. The other 14 are either blue or white, which are considered less of a hazard. The risk assessment matrix reflects the 30 open NTSB recommendations, and like all of the recommendations and or findings, they were rated by hazard severity and probability utilizing military standard 882C. This is in compliance with the authority system safety and program plan approved by the FTA oversight. This military standard provides a uniform way of analyzing the rating, the recommendations, and the sole aim of eliminating hazards or reducing the risk to an acceptable level. Today's update focuses on red and yellow category 1 and 2, in which there are 16 open recommendations. A little deeper in the presentation, I will address the status of the 16. As the slide denotes, two of the 16 recommendations have been submitted to the NTSB for acceptance and closure. R1614 was submitted to the NTSB on December 30, 2016. Fire alarm activations have become a regular part of the full-scale exercises and are used to kick off the emergency response when the scenario involves a smoke event in a station. This includes the ROC response leading to the deployment of jurisdictional first responders. WMATA's Office of OEM has conducted two full-scale exercises using smoke and fire alarm activation as the lead-in to the incident. Greensboro Station in Fairfax County occurred on June 16, 2016. The Southern Avenue, Prince George's, D.C. on November 5, 2016. The last scheduled exercise actually occurred this Sunday, April 23rd at the Navy Yard, and it included a smoke alarm activation. R1629 was submitted to NTSB on February 3rd, 2017. WMATA committed to adhering to and exceeding the NFP 130 as well as Homeland Security exercise and evaluation guidelines. When conducting full-scale exercises, NFPA 130 requires one full-scale exercise per calendar year. WMATA is currently conducting four full-scale exercises each year. The table on the next couple of slides reflect all 16 recommendations, its category, red or white, funding source and amount, as well as an estimated completion date. Several of them are linked together. For example, R1510 requires training once R159 is complete and accepted by the NTSB. The first one, R8014, is a Category 1 item stemming from a DuPont Circle incident in 2006 where an ATC mechanic was struck by a southbound train. The second recommendation on the list, R1020, is from the Fort Totten incident in 2009. The remainder are all from the LaFont fire and fire incident in 2015. I will refrain from reading from the slide, but I'm willing to answer any questions on these 16 recommendations at the end of this briefing. In summary, all of the NTSB recommendations have had their corresponding corrective action plan submitted to the NTSB and are classified as open and acceptable. These action plans will eliminate the hazards or reduce the risk to an acceptable level. All are funded, tracked, and reviewed by WMATA's Internal Compliance Assurance and Oversight Office before being submitted to the NTSB for approval and closure. And the status of these and other recommendations can be seen on WMATA's webpage under the Leadership and General Managers Plan links. The web address to the NTSB detail tracker is listed on the bottom of the slide. This concludes my briefing on the 16 open NTSB recommendations. I am open to your questions.
I'm sorry, I'm not lit. Are there questions on the report? Mr. Lobby.
Just looking at R0804, develop technology to notify train operators approaching work areas. This is the most serious recommendation that you have here, and the estimated completion is December 2019. I assume that you're putting other things in place in the interim?
Yeah, Bob, that would go back to the advanced mobile flagger. That would go back to the more restrictive foul time usage. And that, just for clarity, that 2019 is for the pilot for the FTA to identify the 16 most hazardous hotspots and wire those in. We're also looking to install the ProTran on the work equipment because they're not equipped with ATC packages. And on a side note, we also completed the hotspot survey, so that'll be part of the stand down as well.
So this technology will replace some of the processes and procedures and equipment that you have that you're using now, correct?
What may occur, which it's too early to tell, is that if we can get this working and get it car-borne on a revenue fleet down the line, then it may reduce the need for the advanced mobile flagger because you would replace it via technology.
Other questions? None from you, Mr. Goldman? Wasn't this yours? Okay, good. Well, it's a good report. I appreciate it. All right. Thank you. Let's move on to the next item then, please, Mr. Levin.
Actually, we used a three-year, 2014, 15, and 16 to compare us to other properties. All right, and that was done. There was a software program that gives you, based on the size of your property, the miles traveled, your passenger-linked rides, the best systems to compare yourself to, so we identified those five systems. All right, so the first is the customer injury rate. So, as you can see, it's been a downward four-year positive trend. We have eight fewer injuries than we had in first quarter of 2016, and there was no NTD reportable injuries during the inauguration of the Women's March. So some of the things that we've highlighted as key safety actions are more safety facility inspections, customer outreach, bus operator coaching, bus berthing review, occupational therapist, and the communication campaign. And on a side note, Ms. Porter had asked, due to injuries on Metro Access, that we look at it. They have enlisted the help of an occupational therapist, and with Carol's permission, we'll brief out next month in May on that. All right, so we've made progress. The next is a safety communication campaign. This is something I've worked with Lynn Balasox's people coming up with, specifically Joe Green, and it's basically saying safety is simple. So we had a lot of injuries where people don't have control of their luggage. It falls on to the patron next to them. And a lot of injuries due to people basically blind because they're staring into their cell phones and they trip or fall. So we're calling it Safety is Simple campaign, and it's just reminders of actions they should take. We'll also intend on rolling a similar companion type of campaign out for employees. The next is the employee injury rate. They're predominantly the result of the main drivers are slip, trips, and falls due to poor housekeeping, collision-related, non-preventable collisions on the bus side, and poor ergonomics from lifting and lowering material. So how are we trending? There's a downward positive four-year trend. We've had 15 fewer injuries than in the first quarter of 2016, and a 6% reduction in overall employee injury rates. 21% reduction in preventable injury rates. If you look at us compared to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they're at 6.7 for the industry. We're at 5.0. The next is rail fires debris. This is showing an upward negative four-year trend. However, this year there's been 8 fewer fires in the first quarter of 2016, which comes out to about 9-plus average for the year. All right, so what we're doing to help combat this is proactive track cleaning, drain maintenance, shaft debris, and leaf cleaning, as well as evaluation of vacuum devices. The next is cable fires. The main drivers are unsecured cables, degraded insulation, and water penetration. There's been a downward positive four-year trend. There's been no change from quarter one 2016, down from a high of 6 in Q1 2015. The cable replacement, some of the work we're doing to address this is a cable replacement securement program, so that's essentially getting third rail cables off the ground in the core. I believe we should be completed by the end of the summer with just the underground within the system. We're also doing regularly scheduled cable inspections, and we're repairing tunnel leaks. The next is rail fires related to insulators. That's pretty much driven by environmental conditions such as wet, muddy conditions, contamination. How are we trending? There's been an upward negative trend. One more fire in Q1 16, down from a high of 15 in first quarter of 2015. So what we're doing to address that, as I stated earlier, is drain cleaning, mud removal, and improved inspection processes. As far as rail fires for benchmarking purposes, we're performing the second worst. Boston actually is significantly higher than us, and then you can see where our other peers are at the CTA, BART, MARTA, and SEPTA. As far as derailments go, we had two derailments for this year. Both of them were rail maintenance machines. So how are we doing for the quarter? As I just stated, two derailments were due to rail maintenance machines. 80% of all the derailments occurred within work zones and rail yards, which when you're doing track reconstruction, that's a common occurrence. The main drivers are improper rail maintenance machine movement, poor communication, increase in usage. Note, NTD reporting criteria expanded in 2016 to include all derailments, not just mainline, so that's why we're now reporting out on these types of derailments. So highlighted safety actions, we're retraining of operators, and we've created an RMM evaluation committee, and what that means is for one of the derailments, we found that the ballast car was not properly loaded, and then we have other concerns with the way that they're being brought out to the work sites with housekeeping to for other incidents such as employee injuries. As far as the derailments go, the primary driver where you're seeing this is in support of SafeTrack. In the 11 months before and after analysis, there's been a dramatic increase in the use of these devices, and therefore there's been statistically an increase in derailments. Typically, the vehicles that are involved will be your quad drillers, your spike drivers, your spike pullers, your tire removers, your train cars, your spot tampers, and a prime mover. The other item is red signal overruns. It's typically we're still facing challenges with operational and intentional blindness and miscommunication. For this first quarter, there's been an slight upward trend. 85% of these are revenue vehicles. 77% of those occur on the main line. What we're doing to address it is the retraining of operators, signal LED replacement, vehicle modification for stop and proceed mode, and red signal analysis. I just want to point out with the LED replacement, we've exhausted our supply of LEDs. We've installed every one we had. We're looking at coming up with some type of capital program. So as we move forward, we do this under some type of capital work to address the yard so we can get it done more rapidly. That's still in the process of being developed. Next is pedestrian strikes. The main drivers for that are falling into a bus after departure, cyclist striking the side of the bus, pedestrian impairment, operator inattention. How are we trending for the first quarter of 2017? There's been a 50% reduction in the peak of Q1 2015. 92% of all of these strikes occur outside of crosswalks. Highlighted safety actions include bus operator pedestrian summit, bus management ride-alongs, and drive cam coaching. The next is the bus collision rate. The main drivers are operator inattention, non-preventable rear-end collisions, improper bus position when berthing in bus stops. How are we trending? The first quarter of 2017 is a slight upward four-year trend. There's a 22% reduction from the first quarter of 2016, so year-to-year we're down 22%. 60% of these are non-preventable, where WMATA employees were not at fault. How do we compare to our peers? We're performing the second best. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. I have a couple of questions. On the red signal overruns, I'm, of course, disturbed there's even a slight upward trend. But the operator, inattentional blindness, et cetera, is there any sort of regularity with which this occurs? Can you relate it to hours, the time of day? Is there any reason you see for this repeated?
Yeah, we've looked at it by time of day. We looked at it by fatigue, from a fatigue standpoint. Mm-hmm. We looked at it by geography, and it seems to be to some degree sporadic. So I think this is something that we're going to have to address globally, and I'm hoping that the solution is the 7K stop and proceed mode, which if they have a red signal or a zero speed command, when they go to take propulsion, the train won't move until they put in a four-digit code in order to get the ability to move.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll stop them from, you know, make them stop and think about what's ahead of them.
Well, because they'd have to perform a task, which
right.
would actually
they'd
require
have to
attention.
Theoretically perform multiple tasks, because first they'd have to ask permission from the control center to go into stop and proceed, then they'd have to perform an action, which is punching in a four-digit code, and then they'd have to move the controller.
Mm-hmm. So there's no you can't make any particular correlation with fatigue or with certain stations or certain configurations?
I haven't identified something concrete.
The other
can we follow up on this?
Yes, please.
I'm just a little challenged by the language. So what does inattentional blindness mean? It seems that if you're inattentive, you're not blinded. You're just not paying attention.
It's almost like the same way you would operate your car or habitual habit that you develop. So you come in, you stop at a station, a car marker, you perform a routine task, which is you walk to the other side of the cab, say, you open the window, you open the doors, you observe the platform, you close the doors, you get in the seat, and you proceed. It's that proceeding without stopping and having some type of situational awareness of what's ahead of you, and the system allows you to achieve 15 miles an hour with a zero-speed command. So a lot of these incidents are a train pulling and going a very short distance and running a red signal.
So is this an industry term, inattentional blindness? Why don't we just call it inattentiveness or carelessness or
I believe
neglect?
I'd have to double-check, but I believe that's some of the language that was used in the Atticus report.
Consultants speak or something.
Yeah,
it's odd. I agree.
Figuring out calling it what it is to figure out if we can fix it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. One other question for me on the rail fires, the benchmarking. The slide is fairly remarkable in terms of the MBTA and WMATA. What in the world is that all about? Can you? Well, you don't know. You're not responsible for their data.
Yeah,
I know.
I don't want to comment on the MBTA.
Okay. I had one of the questions.
Although I will say this, there may be difference in variations of how people are reporting fires. We pretty much report everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be, I don't know if you're getting a true apple to apple across the industry, but this is based on what's in NTD.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions? Mr. Goldman.
Yeah. Pat, I want to get a better understanding of this new presentation model, and I want to use the customer injury rate slide to make sure I'm following it. So the top half is just first quarter 2017 data.
It's WMATA versus WMATA quarter
data.
To quarter.
The bottom half of the chart are full year 2016 data, not first quarter data.
The bottom half of the chart is the full year versus other properties for 2016.
Full year other properties. Now, the other properties that are shown, are they in the rank order of lowest to getting higher for the top five, or have you selected different ones to place in these the presentation?
So just for clarity, so if you look at the one that says heavy rail, WMATA is performing the best because we're at 0.09.
Right, but are we the best because we are the best? Is there anybody higher that you've omitted, better in the sense of having a number of less than 0.9?
The way that we did this is no one was omitted. We took, based upon the I believe it's the University of Miami, how do you, what is the best way to compare yourself to assist the property? They have certain parameters based on a variety of criteria. We use that model to select the five properties that most closely resemble Ramada, and that's what we used.
And that's by the subcategory of rail, bus, and transit. That's
yes.
Right.
Right. So one is in the heavy rail. The next is how we're in the middle of the pack for buses. And on the power transit side, we're on the lower end of performance.
Right. In terms of heavy rail, I see the relationship among the five. On bus, I'm trying to understand a little bit why, where Miami comes from. Is this a measurement of bus miles or number of buses in the fleet for a company that got these other four to be the comparables for WMATA?
Okay, I'm gonna read you directly from my notes, which maybe I should have did up front. So how we arrived at what we want to compare. So it says comparable systems were identified by the Urban Integrated National Transit Database, the INTD, developed by the Florida Department of Transportation. The INTD tool utilizes a series of data points, ridership, population served, miles, to identify like properties. These are the comparable properties seen within the presentation. So this is based on a model that's used by the Florida DOT.
Okay. Now, the board has had a longstanding target for customer injury rate, and I believe the target is 1.75, so that for all of these first quarter years, we're still above the board set target.
That's correct. That's correct for customer injury rates. I believe for employee injury rates, we might have done better.
Right. So your omission of the board target, does that mean you no longer think that that board target is relevant or valid for measuring WMATA, or is that just an oversight in the presentation?
I would say it's an oversight. We could add it back in. And I think one of the pre-discussions I had with Bob is to put targets in.
Okay. So I guess what I'm getting at is, we seem to have, at least on the customer injury rate, sort of plateaued out at a number higher than 2 and a number that's higher than our customer injury rate target. So I'm trying to understand whether we should be sticking to the target and still striving to hit that target, or whether, as the chief safety officer, you're more comfortable with the current level of customer injury rate that we've experienced over the last 3-4 years.
I think we should stick with it at this time. I mean, there are additional actions we're trying to take to reduce these. We have an escalated campaign where we installed audible announcements. We're expanding that. I mean, we're coming out with the safety campaign. We're getting, you know, more, we're spending a lot more focus on the environment and stations to improve lighting and things along those lines. I think it might be premature at this point to give up on that target.
Okay. You're talking about rail, and the problem seems to be looking at this chart, slide in terms of comparison with bus, where, you know, we're at 2.5 per million industry, and at least the peer group targets in Miami and Chicago are either around our target of 1.75 or below.
Okay.
So I'm trying to really get at what's the problem on the bus side? What is Miami and Chicago doing right that we don't seem to be doing right, since we're both significantly above them and above what we've set as our customer injury target for bus?
Okay, so I'll say two things to that. One is we kind of focus.
Turn on your microphone, please.
I'm sorry, it is on, but I'll pull it closer. So two of the things we do is, one is we look internally. So how are the accidents happening? So generally, you have a high number of bus accident injuries due to rear-end non-preventable collisions. So what we've done is we now put strobe lights on the back of the buses to draw people's attention to it. That's a relatively new initiative, so I'd like to see if that bears fruit. To your other point, I think maybe we can look at what other agencies are doing to see what they're successful, and specifically the Metro Access with the paratransit side. We went through Willis. They have brought on an occupational therapist. I looked at a presentation, like a pre-look for what they want to present in May. They've come up with a lot of different strategies on how to assist people from their homes to the vehicles. So I'd like to give them more time. If we're not hitting those targets, then we can reevaluate if they're realistic down the road.
I guess where I want to go is to suggest that you look at Chicago, which seems to be the one that's closest to Vermont in terms of metropolitan area, large bus fleet, heavily developed area, and maybe they're doing things that we could learn something from to get our injury rate down to where they are, which seems to be closer to what our target is supposed to be. So I would encourage you and the bus people to take a look at that.
Okay, thank you. We'll do that.
Mr. Lobby and then Mr. Dorsey, please.
Yeah, Mr. Levin and I had a couple of discussions about some of the reports, and one of the frustrations I had with the reports is we did not meet the targets, and we had a list of reasons why we didn't meet the targets, and this didn't seem to be a good way to me to manage safety on this property. I think this report that we have is much better. There's a couple of things that are important here. One, comparison with our peers, and with data. One thing that we have a challenge with is the data is going to be reported a little bit differently on the different properties, depending on their mix of bus and rail traffic. And even here at Washington Metro, where we are reporting, we're doing a better job of reporting than we have in the past. And so some of the numbers have creeped up just because we're paying more attention to them. But I think if we want to have a property that shows continuous safety improvement, we need to measure not just where we are, but what effect the things that we put in place, the new initiatives, the new programs. We need to have a way to measure how those are doing. And I think it's very valid to do a comparison against the industry to see where we stand there. But probably as important, if not more important, is to compare us against ourselves to see if we're making progress on the different aspects of our programs. And one thing, I think this is a good step in the right direction. It goes beyond just measuring employee and employee injuries and passenger injuries. It looks at things like red signal violations, which are an at-risk behavior that doesn't necessarily end up with somebody hurt, but certainly is an at-risk behavior that can result in a worse situation. So I think this is much better. But one thing that I would like the safety department to look at is to see if there can be some goals for these different aspects. The employee injury rates, the passenger injury rates, the red signals passed. If we can set up some goals to show continuous safety improvement, it doesn't do much good if we have a goal that we're just going to fail at in the next 5 years until we completely change the culture here. We need to see some incremental improvement so that we know if we're going in the right direction. And I think if we can establish some of those goals that show incremental improvement, I think we'll have a way of measuring progress and making better decisions on the effect of different programs. So I think this is a very good step in the right direction. But again, I'd like to see some work on the goals to make sure that we have realistic goals that we can strive for, and then let's measure our performance against that also. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you, Ms. Carmody. I think my question is along the lines of Mr. Lobby and Mr. Goldman, in thinking about the targets that we have. Will this help these comparisons to other rail properties help us create more informed targets? It had been my impression from previous safety meetings that at least as far as you all understood, a lot of the targets that we had were aspirational or not necessarily rooted in data. But this is not to discredit the work of other people, but just a number that was put out there that wasn't necessarily linked to data in terms of achievability, et cetera. Will this help these comparisons and thinking about other transit properties? Will they help inform future target setting that we have for our KPPs, KPIs?
I don't necessarily know if other agencies' performance will inform our goal. Our goal has to be based on our environment. But part of the reason why this was done is to be responsive to the board's request that we do this. As far as the comparison, I do think it is a good idea to do this because, to Mr. Goldman's point, then you see a similarly situated property that has the same or relatively same kind of operating environment. And if they're performing well, that might identify a peer that you could reach out to try to see what their strategies are.
And along those lines, just a question about the data itself. So you mentioned on one of the earlier slides that the NTD has specific thresholds. How does that relate to the bus collision conversation that Mr. Goldman started? Do we have a sense of whether or not there's any difference in what might be reported by Miami or Chicago compared to us in terms of the injury thresholds?
Well, the industry threshold would be the same. If you're an FTA property, there's a certain threshold. If you meet that threshold, you report. The question I had was with fires, if people are necessarily considering extinguishing and self-extinguishing how they're reporting, we tend to report more than NTD asks for.
All right. So for this one, though, this is a truer apples to apples.
Correct.
Thank you.
I have Mr. Dorsey and then Mr. Smedberg.
Madam Chairman, I know. Is it possible to compare bus facilities versus other bus facilities in the system as to how they're doing with accidents and et cetera, et cetera?
I don't know. I'd have to look into that. I don't know if they would break it down by perhaps injury rates, but then you'd have to go through sub-injuries of where they occurred and you know, maybe by title.
I mean, all right, let's take accidents. All right, is one garage with X percent of the fleet better than the next garage with X percent of the fleet?
Oh, you mean depot to depot, how the accident rates?
Yeah.
I'm sure we can do that, and I think a lot of those we've identified more in the context of employee assaults. So we identify the routes where the most employee assaults are occurring, and then we target, you know, more police intervention, mm-hmm. more de-escalation of conflict training. So we do that from an employee injury rate on the bus side. If we have a spike or problematic intersections, then those will generally be flagged, and you'll have greater supervision at those locations.
Well, I understand the safety part about the assaults. I'm talking about accidents, et cetera, so that we could see a drill down to see which facility has the best bus operators with the least amount of accidents.
Yeah, I'll look into that.
Thank
I'll see
you.
What type of analysis can be done.
Yes, Mr. Smedberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lavin, on the red light signal overruns, the communication issue keeps coming up, and you have miscommunication listed here. Are there certain types of miscommunications that you're seeing, and if so, what's being done to address the area, those particular areas, or just the miscommunication in general?
So typically when you have a red signal violation that is triggered by a miscommunication, we're finding it's primarily with the work equipment, where you'll have a pilot on the front of the train and they're not communicating properly with the operator. So we looked at, and one of the things we found is that the person who operates the train is considered a pilot. The other person is considered a flagger. So we're getting all the flaggers trained at the same level as the pilots to improve their knowledge of the system. Okay. So.
And of these two main drivers that you've highlighted here, which is there one with a higher percentage than the other, or is it about equal, or predominantly one over the other?
Typically, the ones that involve the communication piece is going to be your work equipment or your rail maintenance vehicles. The ones that involve an intentional blindness are generally your mainline train operation.
Okay, so what's happening more then, I guess, is what
simply. I believe more of the incidents, and I'll double-check the numbers, are occurring with the rail maintenance machines either on the main line or in the yard, where they're running a red signal on the main line because they're not properly communicating or calling out signals.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Dormger.
Okay. So among all the things that we do in safety, it's my view, and I mean, other members might have a different opinion, but I think the most important thing is training and good management. You know, I mean, we have to make investments in technology, obviously. We have to kind of reconstruct when things go wrong and learn lessons. you know, we certainly have to understand, I mean, you just talked about kind of route analysis and kind of understanding the environment that you're in. So all those things are important, but I would say at the top would be training and good management. So just focusing on bus operations for now. I was talking about the rock earlier. I'll try to be more constructive this time. With bus operations, you had a comment, you had a reference there that said bus operator coaching. Okay, so what do we do? What are the forms for that coaching to occur? Do we have bus simulations, equipment, and the front end of a bus operator's experience? I know there's, what is the progression, 5 or 6 years?
I don't know if five or six years.
So that's probably a really important time for us to be engaged with the operator. And then there's opportunities for kind of refresher courses and things like that. I obviously also see bus operations personnel shadowing bus operators out in the field. Some properties have a training bus that you can go out in. It's got all sorts of equipment attached to it where they're measuring your, you know, the hard braking, they're measuring, they've got cameras in there helping you with visual aspects of that. So what's our coaching philosophy with bus operations? If you want to, we can bring this up in the future, but if you could and get into some details, but I think it would be helpful for the public and the board to understand how we're engaging with our employees, because ultimately, I'm all for holding people accountable, but if we're not investing in the people, you know, that's an imbalance, right? So we've got to have accountability, but we've also got to be able to train and supervise, and then have settings where people can talk about, like for instance, how many times did you use your horn today? What were those circumstances? If you're not going to get in trouble, just let me know what happened out there today, so that tomorrow you're a better operator. I interface with a lot of very responsible professional operators. But there's also other ones who it's clear that they haven't been coached enough. You know, they're not positioned right in their seat. They're hard braking. You know, they're not interfacing with the customer as well as they could. What is that coaching philosophy that you guys are trying to instill so that management and labor are working together for the public?
Okay, so I'll give you three specific examples. So the first one is you mentioned the hard braking. That's captured by drive cam. So if there's incidents where the drive cam is triggered, like a hard brake, or a sharp turn, that information is sent to the bus management. They'll go to that specific operator, and they'll coach them to say, hey, why did you have this type of event? It's not a disciplinary approach. It's a coaching. Okay. We have dissent on that comment. All right. The second thing is when we started looking at the training, we started looking at vulnerabilities in the training. And one of the complaints that we repetitively get is that the reflection that you see when you have a shield on creates some type of, you know, glare or an obstacle where an operator needs to be more aware of this when they're operating and how to overcome that challenge. So one of the things we identified a few weeks ago is that when you do the training, they don't have a bus that's equipped with a shield. So they teach it to you, but now we have them. We've now have buses with shields as part of the training, and I think that was implemented probably within the last 10 days. And to your last point about how do we engage in the union, over the last 2 weeks, I've gone to both peer review teams for the close calls. One of the things that the union asked us to do is to say, listen, and I agree with them, we're having a hard time getting people to bring problems forward because there's a fear of retaliation or there's a fear that somebody's going to get them. So they asked that myself and Jolie to put together a video in which we reinforce from an executive management level that the goal of the close call reporting system is to surface problems, and it's three things. It's voluntary, it's confidential, and it's non-punitive. So we finished that video. I saw a rough cut of it yesterday, so I'll have to talk to Lynn, but that'll be going out on the website to get more engagement.
Okay, just one follow-up, and it kind of piggybacks off what Tom was talking about with the depots. I mean, if the operators are changing their routes based on the pick, right? So they could be working out of multiple depots over the course of, say, my first 5 years with the company, right? So what do we know about that operator's experience? I mean, because it's not just one coach. Maybe they're getting great coaching when they were operating out of Northern, but then, you know, they moved to, you know, Western, and the supervisors just don't have the same level of engagement. How do we understand that, that someone's looking out for that operator as they work their way, you know, in into the job, and that they're getting the same, you know, they're getting the same quality of guidance and that same coaching? I mean, I'm not going to ignore the remark that was made to the side here. I mean, your job is not to supervise and handle the operations. Your job is to help the managers be more safety conscious and more you know, aware of their overall responsibilities. Are you guys observing how the, you know, superintendents and supervisors handle those coaching sessions? Are you giving them pointers on how to make sure that that can be done in a, you know, an open and candid way without fear of retaliation? I mean, what's your guys' strategy to coach the coaches?
Well, what I did is not speak specifically to the close calls. I think it has the greatest value in my mind if we can get that up and running. So one of the things I found is that I don't believe that a lot of the information that's discussed in that meeting is truly being fully maximized. So what I did is I now have one of my direct reports embedded in that close call meeting. And I've asked Joe Leader to do the same, and I'm sure he will. He's identifying higher-level people. So once you show that level of commitment, that level of engagement, I'm hoping that works. But to your point about specifically watching tasks, I've had my safety officers go out to depots where we experienced the most employee injuries on the bus mechanic side. They have done job hazard assessments. They've reduced those injuries significantly, and more importantly, they've now trained the supervisors at those depots on how to do those job hazard assessments themselves to help raise the caliber of what we're doing.
Are there other questions or comments? Yes.
What steps have we taken to bring the union, in essence, having a union involved in our training programs and listening to the bargaining group as it relates to some of our safety concerns?
Okay, so I've met with union leadership a few times, and one of the things that we're trying to introduce is called a safety dispute resolution form. So that is a form that will be given to workers. If there's a hazard they see, they'll have an immediate recourse on how to get that addressed. In addition to that, I've met with both Raymond Jackson and Carol Thomas because we want to look at the reporting structure for the union safety, the joint management union safety committees, and try to give some kind of guidance and structure to those meetings so that issues, you know, they don't just languish forever. We can actually start resolving some of these. And a lot of it, you know, I'm hoping, you know, if employees don't feel comfortable filling out a safety dispute resolution form, I want them to know that the close call system is out there where they can elevate concerns as well.
Follow up here. I think it's an imperative that we just don't have a policing action, that we have greater interaction and listen to the workers in terms of how we can make improvements as well.
If I could, Mr. Chair, that has been an issue that we recognize from the start, is that there's been a disconnect and a discipline placed, a discipline-focused management approach. We are working from the superintendent level down to get that change. It does not change overnight. We've had to make some personnel decisions to deal with that. We have to do more on the training side, excuse me, of our management team to do that. And we obviously need a partnership to do it as well.
All right. Thank you. This has been a very interesting, productive meeting. Thank you, Mr. Wiedeveld. Thank you, Mr. Lavin, for your participation and for all the members. Do keep us informed on your – oh, is there one more question? Mr. Goldman, yes.
I don't have a question on the presentation, but I didn't want to ignore the fact that we had a major red line shutdown this morning. And I guess I would appreciate understanding because the last – message I saw was that we're making repairs. So if we could provide some information for both the board and the public as to what is being repaired. Is there actually a shutdown in effect now between DuPont Circle and Gallery Place as opposed to single tracking? And whether service will be restored on the full red line by dinner time by the evening rush hour?
Okay, so I just want to explain what occurred today. So we had, once again, we had an incident in where stray current ignited a component on a fastener, and this one, it happened to be the clip that secures the fastener to the rail. This, I believe, is relatively the third one in that general geographic area over, say, the last 10 to 2 weeks. So what we're finding is that the fasteners at that location, and the fastener is what supports the rail, are basically at the starting to get to the end of their useful life. And what that means is those fasteners are metal plates that are encased in rubber. Once that rubber starts to deteriorate, you lose your insulative capacity, and it'll allow the traction energy on the rail to go through that fastener to ground and ignite. So what we're doing is, and I know that Joe Leader, the chief operating officer, walked those tracks last Saturday to get a visual of them himself. He identified some of the areas there where you have problematic environmental conditions. This was not one of them today. It was actually a dry location. And he came up with a punch list that they immediately started working on. What we're doing is we're getting immediate track lights tonight. We're going to have our engineers and our higher-level management go in and go through there. They're also going to start an immediate fastener replacement program. We're going to do it further downstream through a capital program, but obviously we need to accelerate that. In addition to that, we're having our traction power forces go out and mega the cable to ensure that we're giving the traction power every opportunity to take the correct path back to the substations. In addition to that, we're also invoking a speed restriction or a performance restriction, which means that instead of operating at level 5, we're going to be operating at level P3. So it's essentially when you pull out of a station, you're not slamming your foot on the gas. It's a more gradual increase. That should help restrain some of the traction power energy. So this is what we have now. I'm going to meet with them after this meeting and see what other further actions we can take.
If I could just add, though, this is tied to the ongoing preventive maintenance inspection program that we need to implement, which, as you know, begins July 1. Now, we're doing this now, but to do that in full force, we need the more time to get out there. For instance, to do the straight current testing, you have to cut rail, you have to run current through it and see where it's leaking and then go after it. So it takes a lot of time down to do that and impacts on service. So that's exactly why we're pushing for that program to get it started as quick as we can.
I understand those are the long-term needs, and I appreciate the understanding of the exact problem. But is it true that there is no service now between DuPont Circle and Gallery Place? And will that service be restored by the evening rush hour?
Again, we will.
Well, what can we tell?
We will let people know as soon as we know. But they're out there working on the issue as we speak. What we do when we do these is we put the safety of the individuals out there doing the work. So that's why if we can single track, we can. If we can't, then we don't. So that's what's playing out right now. And our commitment again is to safety, trump service, and this is an example of that.
Yes. Thank you. Is that? Mr. Goldman, is that the end of your? Okay, one more.
As one of the people who got caught up in the red line delays this morning, I just wanted to say that I thought that our communication on this was pretty good. The alerts were very informative. The train that I was on, the operator actually gave us a very detailed and up-to-date sense of what was happening, and also suggested, and there were some station announcements that suggested alternative routes too. So I thought we were doing, there's no question it was a huge mess, but I thought we were doing a fairly good job of communication, and we don't always do that, so thank you.
Good. All right. Well, as I was saying, thank you for the meeting. Also, please keep us informed of your response to FTA. We'd like to see a copy of your response. The committee would. Thank you. Could I have a motion to adjourn? Second? Second? I hear a second. I'm sure I did. Okay. Adjourned.